Try not to sound like it's 7 a.m., Ben.
Try to make it sound like it's not 7 a.m. Okay, Derek. Yes, sir. Here we go. Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Tech Reformation.
I am keeping
okay,
that in.
Here we go. No, don't do it. Okay. Okay, here we go. Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. My name is Ben.
My name is Craig.
And I'm Derek.
I think it's the first time I've said anything other than, and I'm Craig.
That's not true. Whenever I say my name is, you always copy me.
Oh, really?
I've done it before. Yeah, I've done it before, and you did the same thing.
I should just do something totally different next week. Watch out for that next week. I'm gonna blow you all out of the water.
And this is Tank. That's what you should do next week.
That'll work well.
Just kidding. We have a bit of follow-up this week. First off, guys, I deleted Pocket Casts.
Oh, no,
and Craig is again. Very hurt by it.
Well, so, okay. Well, give us the reasons why, Ben. I'm very happy for you, by the way.
Well, because I told Derek that I would test out Overcast for the week, and so I just got rid of Pocket Casts after I switched everything over, which, by the way, was really easy because of the OPML thing. Is that what it's called, OPML? Export and import?
Maybe.
I don't know. Something like that. OPML, I got it right. That's amazing. That's what it's called, export or import OPML. I guess it's a list of podcasts or something. It's probably like XML, but for podcasts.
It would be like OPML. I know there's a lot of various apps that would run off of that. Like you could export and import. Like I know mind mapping, you can export and import. But anyway, it's like a standard.
Boom! Outline processor markup language is an XML format for outlines. Man, nailed that one.
There you go.
All right, cool. Yeah, so that thing makes it really easy to switch between podcast apps. So when I told you I would try it for a week, I literally switched to it and deleted the other one so that I would try it for the week. And so far I like it more.
Good. So I'm happy for this continued period of podcast app waffling from our dearest Ben.
Listen,
Robin.
It's not waffling. I have made a decision and committed to it, and I deleted the other app to prove it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'm just sad because I wasted like $5 on buying you Pocket Casts.
Oh, shoot. I forgot about that.
Oh, bring on the guilt trip.
Oh,
I'm kidding,
no.
I'm kidding,
I
fine.
Forgot that Pocket Cast still isn't free for some unknown reason.
No, I paid that money so that you would try it, and you've tried it, and you've made a decision. And if it's the wrong decision, that's okay. It's your decision. You'll own it.
Okay, so give us the reasons. The listeners want to know, Ben, why you switched back to Overcast.
Yeah, we
want to
know.
Okay, well, it's three reasons. Number one, single episode podcasts. So like I want to try out a podcast, I just want to listen to the most recent episode. I can't do that without subscribing in Pocket Casts. That drives me nuts. That's the biggest thing,
which they're working on. But anyway,
they said Craig tweeted at them on my behalf, which was very nice, and they said that they're working on it. So now they know that there's some guy out there, some really really rude guy who is just the most, like, wants all the features for himself, named Ben, and he is on their trail. Anyway, that was number one. Number two, I told you guys, I thought maybe that it was killing my battery. I don't really know how to prove that one. And then number three, which I just discovered this week as I was using Overcast, is that Pocket Casts actually has some really weird idiosyncrasies around playing audio, which is the main core functionality of a podcast app. So like when I play pause, for example, I would usually have to skip back 15 seconds because the pause or the play, I'm not sure which one even, it stops or it starts up after where I stopped. And so I miss a few seconds of content. And then also the trim silence thing that I just never used it when I was on Pocket Casts because I didn't feel like I could trust it. But on Overcast, I have no problem with both of those things.
Interesting.
I have never had that weird pause play thing. That sounds bizarre.
It's probably one of those things that you don't notice until you know it's there, and then you notice it all the time, and then it drives you crazy.
But I start podcasts all the time. You'd think I'd pick up on it and go, hang on, this conversation isn't making sense.
Maybe it's because I'm on 1. Whatever X speed. I don't know. It could be a combination of things. I'm not really sure.
Yeah,
possibly.
But then there were also some weird, like when I was, my phone was locked or I was out of the app trying to play pause. Sometimes it just flat wouldn't work. I feel like Overcast has been more consistent, although I've seen that happen on Overcast as well. So anyway, I don't know.
I guess the moral of this story is there is no perfect app.
For Ben.
No to-do apps, no podcast apps, no nothing. Ben, you're a programmer. You can just whip one up right out of your
your brain. No. Nope, Derek, nope. That's not how that works. while we're on the topic of podcasts, actually, though, I do want to withdraw a recommendation for the Crimetown podcast from Gimlet Media for two reasons. Number one, and I told the guys this before the show, I felt really bad and convicted after I recommended Crimetown because the next episode in their feed after I recommended it in our feed was like 60 million F-bombs in the same episode. I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. So I felt really bad about that. But then even more recently, I think they're up to like episode 10 or 11 now. And I was just listening the other day and, man, I was really bored. I feel like they've committed the unforgivable sin of podcasting. It's now boring. And so for those two reasons, I'm out. Okay, this isn't Shark Tank. For those two reasons, I'm withdrawing my recommendation from Crimetown. If you've been listening and you still like it, that's great. But I feel like I can no longer recommend it.
You have to maintain your credibility there.
Yes, I value my reco a lot. And if you start to reco crappy things, then people will devalue your reco and they won't listen when you recommend things. So that's why you don't just rubber stamp everything as a reco, because then it devalues your reco.
Yep.
And we got some more follow-up, right, Derek?
Yes. So there is an update on the news story where there is this murder committed, maybe, or perhaps suicide. Or I don't know. But anyway, but this guy is being tried for murder, and the law enforcement wants to subpoena his Echo for data that it may have recorded while, you know, during that evening. And we were talking about, that was, what, episode 73? Just a couple of episodes ago. Yeah, episode 73, that Tank and I were talking about this. And the end of that is that they've basically given up the legal battle to protect the... Did I say Alexa yet? Dang it. I need to stop doing that.
You just said it again.
Yeah, I know. But Amazon...
So wait, if I say Alexa, are you just going to beep it?
Yep.
Alexa.
Oh, no. No. I've created a monster. No. Okay, that's going to
be fun. I wasn't on that one.
Yeah, that's right. You weren't.
Those beeps got really
annoying. I had to get them all out right now. Alexa.
All right. Well,
Alexa,
anyway.
Order me more paper towels.
Okay.
Alexa, buy me some cookies. Alexa, mail them to insert address here.
You know, you've just rescinded your recommendation for Crimetown on account of all the F-bombs, and now everybody's going to think that there's a bunch of swearing going on in the background of our podcast. And then where's our credibility going to be?
When I first listened to that episode, I think the first beep was before the explanation of what the beep was for, and I was like, uh-oh! But then it became really, really funny after you explained what it was.
Good. We had other feedback on that liked it too. So I'm just going to keep doing it. But don't abuse the privilege, because it takes a lot of time to edit those in.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. But Amazon has abandoned the legal battle because the defendant has handed over the data on, has handed over his Echo speaker himself. So I guess any local data on that is in the hands of law enforcement, and they're going to try to glean what they can out of that. So it's kind of closed for now. It's the point isn't really being pushed. So there's that. Also, in follow-up, the article, one of the very first rumors that we've ever discussed on the podcast last week about the Wall Street Journal report of USB-C iPhones is pretty much has been denied by Ming-Chi Kuo, who is like the premier Apple analyst. He works over in East Asia and he's has got good ties with the supply chain there and everything. Generally, the things that he says have a much higher percentage of a much higher probability of being right. So anyway, he just clarified that, yeah, the iPhones are not going to be coming out with USB-C. They're going to have USB-C on the cord, but Lightning on the other end to plug into the iPhone. So the wind has gone out of really this rumor, which is unfortunate because I really want USB-C on iPhones now. Now that it has been suggested.
I don't know why anyone expected anything differently.
Well, there are a lot
it's
of good...
It's Apple. They're always going to have proprietary connecting ports.
That was really like a...
Because they hate their customers.
That was really like a Steve Jobs thing, though. Like, this Apple,
that's
I
fair.
Can... The Apple of today, I can totally see doing it because they're like, this is a better connector. Everybody change your wires again. It's okay. You'll be fine. You'll get over
it. That's a fair point.
Plus on the iPad, as far as productivity goes and as far as like accessories and stuff, USB-C would just be fantastic if Apple really wanted to get the iPad in a place where it could, you know, start competing with other, you know, higher level devices, but we probably won't get it.
You sounded a little bit bitter about the iPad thing.
Well, I mean, the iPad's still great. Don't get me wrong. I still love the iPad. Tanya has one from church, an iPad Pro that I try to use whenever I can. because I really like the way it works. There's still obviously things to improve, but I really want USB-C on my iOS devices. Just makes sense. Go with all one connector across the whole board. But, oh well, we'll see come September.
And that's a wrap on our follow-up for this week.
And we're into the news. First up this week, we have a video sharing platform, Vimeo. They are joining competitors Facebook and YouTube by also adding support for 360-degree video. The site, which targets video creators more specifically, is taking the extra step of helping coach people on how to make these sorts of immersive videos through a series of online tutorials. There's also a new channel on the site, which allows viewers to explore a curated selection of 360-degree video content. With its launch into 360-degree video, as with other uploads on its site, Vimeo aims to differentiate itself from rivals by focusing on creators' ability to make money from their content. Creators with pro or business memberships can choose to sell their videos, rent them, or offer them on subscription, instead of giving them away for free or trying to support them with ads, as on YouTube. Creators get to keep 90% of the revenue generated after transaction costs, notes Vimeo.
That's a high percentage.
Yes, it is.
Do you know, Derek, when you record these, do you use a special camera? Like, how does it actually work?
There's two different types of cameras you can use.
Okay, tell me.
One is recorded using a rig of more than one camera, so multiple cameras filming different angles. The other one is a single camera with multiple lenses covering a whole bunch of different angles.
Okay, so I can watch it on my iPhone and do the little like turnaround thing like Snapchat does, but I can't record it on my iPhone, to be clear.
You could, there are like, I'm pretty sure there are dongles out there that would connect into apps that would let you record 360-degree content.
Okay, interesting.
But not with the camera that comes attached in your iPhone.
Yeah, okay. That's great. That's what I thought. That makes sense to me. I just, wasn't sure at first because I would think that would be impossible. But, you know, you never know these days with technology becoming all autonomous and such.
WordPress is opening up some new editing options with the release of a plugin for Google Docs. The extension works in Chrome and allows anything written in Google Docs to be ported directly to WordPress.com with most formatting and layout choices intact. Publishing can't happen directly from Google Docs, though. You'll still have to go into WordPress for a final preview and to click publish.
Do you guys think that's actually a big deal? Like, is that helpful for people?
Well, WordPress is a quarter of the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
Some people don't realize this. I'm being serious, though. WordPress is actually 1 out of 4 sites on the internet are made from WordPress.
Yeah, it's massive.
Which is just bonkers.
It's huge. Yeah, it's ginormous. I don't think the second place, I don't even know what second place is, and I doubt it comes anywhere near close.
It's probably Joomla or Drupal or something as far as content management systems go, but even so, it wouldn't be anywhere near. WordPress, I just think, I don't know.
74 million sites.
You still, like, the fact that you still need to log in is a bit of a no-brainer because nothing is really what you see is what you get. As far as content management goes online. And so I just wonder if the Google Doc thing, I can see how it would be like maybe a little bit of a streamline if that's how you do a lot of your content generation in terms of processes. But I also think it's not going to save you that much time because you're going to have to check it anyway and probably fix some stuff in the formatting on the WordPress end.
Mm-hmm.
Real-time follow-up. Some random guy on Quora named Cameron says he's a CIO, so maybe he has a little bit of credibility here. But he says 1 in 5 sites of the internet are WordPress. But in 2011, it was determined that 20 to 25% of all new websites were built on WordPress. And the next highest in the CMS market share space is... Drumroll, please. Thank you. Joomla. Craig was right.
Joomla.
But the difference is WordPress has 53% of CMS market share, whatever that means, and Joomla has 9. That's crazy.
My goodness.
Yeah. I think it
and
used
Joomla's
to be,
pretty not good, if I recall correctly. I've used it before, and it's
I think
not
Joomla
fun.
Joomla used to be really big, and then WordPress kind of took over. I think that was kind of what happened.
It's all the pricing, yeah. Right? WordPress is free. Joomla costs money. Is that what it is?
No, I think they're both free. It's just WordPress is a lot
free.
Easier.
Okay.
WordPress is a lot easier to develop for. Sorry, not to develop for. WordPress is easier to pick up and use, I guess is what I'm saying. So someone who's trying to build a website.
For a bum off the street.
More logical and easy to get your head around. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair point. But if you want a nice looking website and for fairly cheap, Squarespace.
So
much easier to use. Mm-hmm. So much better end product.
Flickr received a new update that will allow users to search for images based on visual similarity. Now you'll be able to pick an image from search results and find more photos that share the same shape, composition, color, or content category. In a blog post, Flickr says it uses deep neural networks to analyze the photos as they're uploaded to the server. This helps to define the contents of the image, then flag whether or not it's safe for work. It's similar to what Facebook recently launched last month, where users can search for photos based on their content without requiring the uploader to manually add tags.
Yeah, this is sort of the new trend in photo sharing or online photo storage, but just doing text searches against images. I honestly, and maybe I should look this up, but I don't know how they do this. I just know that Google Photos was the first one to do it, and it was, like, astonishingly good.
Mm-hmm.
They had some issues early on, which I think we talked about on air a while back, but it seems like most of those are fairly well ironed out, and I guess Facebook and Flickr figured out how to do the same thing and basically copied them. It's a really dope feature.
I'm surprised that Flickr's taken this long to get up to speed on that. Like, because I remember you talking about Google doing this. That was ages ago, Ben, that you were saying that they'd sort of come out with that feature. Okay, and I'm going to insert some extra news this week because, you know, sometimes it's good to educate Americans on things outside of America.
Yeah, sure.
That's going to come back to bite me, I can tell. So I came across a story today, actually. I think it's only been published in the last 24 hours. The headline is Elon Musk promises Australia a huge new battery farm in less than 100 days or it's free. And this is particularly pertinent to me because I live in South Australia, which is a state within Australia, and we have had some blackouts in the last 6 months. There was one in February that was a 104-degree heat wave.
Oh, wow.
And there was fairly major blackouts throughout parts of the state. Thankfully, I did not get impacted by that one. But last year, towards the end of last year, I think it was maybe September, October sometime, there was like almost an entire statewide blackout for, you know, 24 hours-ish or maybe a bit less than that in some parts. Up to 2 or 3 days in other parts of the state, in like rural parts of the state.
Wow.
So basically, coal power plants, which is like where most of our energy has been coming from, are sort of being shut down gradually. And so we've got a fair bit of wind power and stuff in SA. Like there's some decent sized wind farms and whatever, but still rely on sort of fossil fuels for our main power source. And yeah, for a whole bunch of reasons, it's just become a big political football. And you know, basically they're not able to supply enough for what the demand is. So Musk is saying he can build us a big battery farm, and he can do that in a way that's going to supply the whole state essentially with enough power to keep running in one of these kind of events. And he can do it in 100 days or else we don't have to pay for it. So it'll be interesting to see what the South Australian government does about that, whether they're keen for it or whether they have. I know they're already, you know, they've already been sort of trying to plan and work out what the best sort of way forward is. So Tesla or Musk may have already missed his window of opportunity, but.
Oh, my Alexa. That. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. So.
Beep.
Yeah, 100 megawatts.
Derek, you have such a dirty mouth, man.
So they're saying 100, Elon is saying 100 megawatt battery storage farm in 100 days. That man is crazy. That is insane. That is so big.
Yeah, he does think that we're living in a simulation, so you're right about that.
Well, maybe he'll have to just hack some code and get that done, but that is insane. That is a lot of watts.
I just want to mention that on this story, two things. Number one, we've clearly just had a hostile takeover from down under of Tech You Should Know, right? Tech You Should Know.
What? What? I'm not hostile.
And it was great. I loved it. Personally, I was a big fan. Second, on this story, all of this news is coming from tweets.
Oh.
Did you guys know that?
Oh.
He tweeted this. Like, that's crazy to me. Yeah. It's like we're covering, we're CNN and we're covering Donald Trump tweets or something.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just, just crazy.
Elon Musk tweets are very interesting and they're very Trumpian in the fact that everyone reports on everything Elon tweets. Like,
well,
there's
he also uses Twitter to say really big things like this.
And like, I mean, Elon has basically announced a boring company that we're all not quite sure if he's serious. He's probably serious because he's Elon, but like a boring company to make tunnels underground so to reduce traffic. Like he just tweets this stuff and is like, oh, let's just do this. This will be fun.
Oh, you mean boring, like boring holes, not
like
boring,
a boring like machine.
Dull.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Not like Crimetown.
Oh, I definitely took it the other way. Whoops.
Yeah,
like Crimetown. Oh, gosh. That's, man. Okay.
Bringing it back around.
So it turns out the tweets are between him and the CEO of Atlassian. Craig, do you know Atlassian? It's an Australian company?
Yeah. I know big, of it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Big tech company. They have a lot of products that compete with like Google Docs and stuff like that. Project manager-y things. We use a lot of their stuff at work. So. It's pretty neat. Anyway, their CEO was tweeting at Elon to get this thing done. He said he would take care of the politics in 7 days and that they would have a contract. That's pretty interesting.
Wow. That is pretty interesting. Yeah, we'll see how this goes. And that's all the news for this week. If we missed something you think we should have mentioned, or if you see something particularly interesting during this next week that we should know about, tweet us at Tweet at us at Tech Reformation on Twitter. Our sponsor this week is Missionalware, the Reformed Theology gift shop. Missionalware has all sorts of fun and useful things to broadcast your faith and make deference to the theologians of old who have come before us. The designs are really beautiful, with creeds, quotes, and faces of various reformers available for printing across a variety of items, including clothing like t-shirts and hoodies. Like, for instance, I am sporting my Charles Spurgeon hoodie right now. It says, growing a beard is a habit most natural, scriptural, manly, and beneficial. And I love it. And people around me get a kick out of it, too. The printing is really high quality. It's not like, you know, if you get an iron on and iron it on. This, I think these are printed directly onto the shirts and materials. Very good. Feels very durable. All sorts of other things. Flasks, coffee tumblers, posters, journals, that sort of stuff. Missional Wear has been doing their thing for over 6 years now and has grown an impressive library of designs and items that will appeal to any theologian, whether you are just now stepping into deeper waters or whether you've been a theology nerd for years. Check them out at missionalwear.com, and thanks to them for sponsoring Tech Reformation.
Hey, wait, can we pause right here so I can get more coffee?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay, great.
It's only 12:20 a.m. We may as well break.
Okay, Ben's back with his coffee and blanket. Just tuck up.
I have read about 2 lines of one of the Uber stories.
All right, well, I'll try to bring you up to speed. So,
what's up?
So for our main topic this week, Uber.
We're just going right back into it.
Yeah, why not?
Well, I'm in the market for a new coffee pot I've just discovered, because my coffee pot is making all of the best coffee taste like crap. It's horrible. You guys remember last week when I had a sip of coffee that I was really excited to try,
yeah,
and it was the most disgusting thing I'd ever tasted?
Yep.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's because it was cold.
I'm pretty sure it's the coffee pot.
Ah.
I don't know how this works, but if listeners have coffee pots that are really great and also not $1 million, please let me know in the Slack this week.
When you say coffee pot, is that like a coffee machine or just like a plunger pot type thing?
No, yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing that makes the coffee, yeah.
Okay.
So, machine, I don't know how I'm going to edit that in, but we'll figure that out. So, for our main topic this week, we are going to be talking about Uber. And I think specifically we're going to concentrate on like the sexual harassment issues at Uber and the general company like vibe there, like just the attitude the company has as far as like HR, and like it's way out of whack. So it all started with a former Uber site reliability engineer, Susan Fowler, accusing the company of rampant sexual abuse, harassment and human resources negligence in a blog post. She claims that on her first day out of training, she was solicited for sex by a superior on an internal company chat thread. She immediately captured screenshots of the messages and sent them to Uber's human resources department. You'd think this would have been resolved quickly after that, but she says that the harassment only continued, preventing her from moving up within the company. Upper management told me, and this is a quote from Fowler, upper management told me that he was a high performer and they wouldn't feel comfortable punishing him for what was probably just an innocent mistake on his part. At this point, Fowler says in her post she was given a choice of remaining on the team and accepting a poor performance review or moving to a different team, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's crazy.
She didn't want to leave the role that she felt she was best prepared to fill, but she switched teams. And once she had settled into her new role, she regularly had conversations with female employees who shared similar stories about HR negligence, even citing unacceptable experiences with the same superior who solicited her. So when she brought this up to HR, she was told that this was like a first offense and that, you know, this person hasn't done it before, but clearly this person had done it before. And these other people were told the exact same thing, that, oh, this was the first offense. It's we're not going to do any disciplinary charges. So there's clearly a toxic corporate structure here. After this news story, there was other ones. The Uber CEO, first off, said immediately after that he would have people come in to examine the company, that he had no knowledge of this, blah, 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 blah. And then there was another software engineer alleging sexism from Uber. And this was slightly different. She summarized an email that she sent to Uber's HR department about her manager, was that her manager allegedly refused to accept any feedback and implied that the reason Lusk was not progressing in her career was because she wore tank tops. There's just a lot of issues here. And the fact that the HR department, whose responsibility is to basically keep employees happy and to make sure that they don't get sued, was not following through with that responsibility and defending the offenders instead of the victims. So, yeah. So this would suggest a problem higher up that perhaps the CEO did is kind of aware of this culture, or if he isn't, he's causing it and not and just blind to what is going on. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this?
Sexism is bad.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be happening.
I feel like Uber had a really great idea to fix a noticeable problem, and they executed really quickly and seemingly well on it, which ended up in making a lot of money and being valued very highly, like one of the most valuable companies in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, all along the way, they've continued to have oodles and oodles of problems in just a lot of different ways. This just being one among many. Not to downplay this issue, and we're going to talk about this one specifically, but this is, I think, in a myriad of issues. Like, people have been seriously harmed / killed in Ubers.
Yeah.
They've had problems with the government, with regulation. They've had problems with taxi companies. It's like, it's just bad. It's been one bad thing after another for Uber, and they also have issues with paying people and considering them employees. It's just, it's not great. It doesn't make me feel good about using Uber because of all the problems I know about, which is sad because, again, it is such a good idea, and they have been the first ones to do something like this on such a scale, but they've sort of had to basically just ruin people's lives to make it happen, which is the worst. And the end does not justify the means.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So,
and I even like, as far as like the, there have been people coming out as like to this story being like, you know, women in tech are really not surprised by this. This happens a lot of places. This isn't even just an Uber problem. There's lots of problems with Uber that may not exist in other tech companies. But I found this one article on The Verge, interesting about why women in tech aren't surprised by the Uber saga. And basically the internet exploded after the Susan Fowler blog post came out with tweets and blog posts from other women in tech. And I mean, there's obviously a lot of indignation going on, but this happens a lot. And I don't know. There are obviously gender issues in tech, judging from like the outcry that has happened from this story. And
I think there are gender issues in the workplace.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Not just tech, but yes, we certainly notice them in tech probably the most, because those are the companies everyone talks about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's like a, it's not good that a man can do the exact same job as a woman and get paid more. That's a result of the fall.
Right.
It's a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and you don't need to be a feminist to understand that and to
You don't even have to be progressive or liberal. Like that's just like that's a Christian issue. Man and woman are equal in the eyes of God, both created in His image.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's almost a denial of this kind of in the culture that we run in. Like, because there is like this false dichotomy built up of well, I don't know if it's a false dichotomy, but anyway, that you, in order to believe that women are being not treated fairly, you have to be a liberal feminist and you have to be for like abortion, and there has to be all these other things thrown in there.
Which, to be clear, we think abortion is obviously wicked and vile and should not happen because you're murdering children.
Of course.
Right. I would actually go further than that and say that most of third wave feminism is wicked in some way, because it's actually about pride rather than equality. But, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of another topic.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go quite there. Personally,
I don't even know what that is, Craig.
Yeah, I'd have to get a good definition on that probably first.
What, third wave feminism?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say third wave. Oh. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of third wave things.
There's a good Sheologians episode that explains the different phases that feminism's gone through. So we're currently in third wave. And third wave feminism is like feminism started as like women saying we're not just 1950s housewives, which is a fair comment,
mm-hmm.
but it's now ended up as what you just described, which is to be pro women, you have to also be pro abortion. You have to be pro, you know, pretty much everything, you know, women taking over, not just being equal to men, but being better than men. The future is female, all those kinds of things. Which is kind of where, that's why I said, like, it's, I think the root sin of feminism is pride, in this day and age, because it's gone from not just fighting for an equality, which already exists in the eyes of God, but fighting for women to have the upper hand, almost to sort of teach men a lesson, I guess, which is actually just going to cause the same kind of problems in the opposite direction.
I don't get why we swing to extremes so much. Well, I guess I do understand, right? Because it's an effect of sin. But like, we sort of think that one extremism will be combated by another. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not actually helping anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I would be really cautious personally. Like, I absolutely understand where you're coming from, Craig, there with like they're like the main thrust of third wave feminism, what it is now is it should not be supported. But there are aspects to what feminism is that I'm not cool with, like writing it off whole cloth.
Oh, no, there are valid arguments within the feminist argument. Yeah,
I would need some more clarity on what you mean there, Derek.
Well, I mean...
equal pay would be one, so that's a valid...
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with being a feminist. By the way, I was the first one to bring that up, so I'm for equal pay. Let me be clear. What's really funny about the reason I feel the need to clarify is what's really funny about these conversations, like you were starting to say, Derek, is that when people hear me say something, they immediately think binary.
Mm-hmm.
Either you're a feminist or you're like a fundamentalist, you're a chauvinist, right?
Right.
Like, you either love women or you hate women. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. I don't think we have to tend to one extreme or the other. I think there's a third way, which isn't a middle option, but it's opposite to both. The gospel-centered option, which embraces women for their inherent worth and dignity made in the image of God, mm-hmm. and champions their causes because out of love for neighbor, but doesn't exalt women to the place of God or to the place of above men. Because that would be just as bad as what we do now. Like, exactly. But for some reason, people only hear it on the binary.
Yeah.
It's like, if you say something about equal pay, you're immediately a feminist. And I'm like, no, I would not embrace that term and refer to myself with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the baggage that comes with it.
Right. Yeah, I would say the exact same thing.
That's just our generation, though, really. Like, excuse me. It's the same on LGBT issues. You know, like, you either... love gay people or you hate gay people. There's no kind of other ground of saying that that you do love gay people, but you also disagree with their lifestyle choice and believe that it is going against God's design for human flourishing and human relationships. Mm-hmm. There's no kind of way of having that other option. It's just those binaries like you were talking about, Ben.
Yeah, I don't think the binary thinking is new, but I do think that with our generation, Craig, like you're saying, we for some reason think that to disagree with someone is to hate them. And that's just not the case. Like, mm-hmm. the three of us have probably a lot of disagreements with one another on theological things, life things, whatever, but we still love each other and we just talk through those things with respect for one another. You know, like, I don't hate you guys. I never have, and I never will. But for some reason, we just think that if we disagree, we have to hate that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, I think, is a kind of new thing with our generation.
Yeah. I think the internet has definitely had an effect on this, and like and go through the whole list, the social media circles we surround ourselves with, the ability to search for the things that support our view, the ability to find the extreme of the other argument and, take that as the other person's argument all the time, like, and that you can't have that opinion without, you can't hold any of the opinions, in that without, you know, subscribing to the name that endorses all of them. And there's a lack of graciousness, I think, in our culture and consideration for other people, that is, yeah, it is really unfortunate. And it leads to things like, you know, there's been the whole fight about the day without a woman thing that happened this week in,
mm-hmm.
like, I've seen Christians all across like everywhere be like, oh, this is bad. This is, you know, this is just, I don't know.
Because the assumption is that you're a feminist if you do something like that.
Right. Right. And you're taking,
and there are a lot of, I don't know if you'd say this, Derek, but I think there are a lot of components of this thing Craig was talking about. I'd never heard it called third wave feminism, mm-hmm. but this sort of new feminism that run contrary to the gospel, like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. There are some things that they seem to be for, like equal pay, that are good things that I want to be for also. Mm-hmm. But I would not embrace the term feminism because of all the baggage that comes with it.
Right.
Like I was saying earlier.
And I think just like you can have true believers in a Catholic church, that you can have people who have reasonable opinions under the feminist name that may not understand really the thrust of like the core feminist movement, like what quote unquote true feminism is, because there's so many varieties of what people mean when they call themselves feminist, that we, I guess I don't really, we're kind of rabbit trailing off of the core thing, but I really like this topic that we need to be more gracious and kind to people when we're discussing things like this, and not write off good social, good social wars, for the lack of a better term, on a name or on like the majority of what we, you know, see that like a news outlet will write it up as, instead of, because everybody has their different opinion of what this means, or, I mean, there's, doesn't mean that there's not a core thing that is what that is, but, I don't know, just people be nice to each other and listen to each other.
it's a little bit stronger than that though, too.
Yeah.
That's true. Yes. Love your neighbor. But I think part of that is striving for justice for your neighbor.
Yeah.
That's part of loving your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shame to me when, I see feminists in this example fighting for equal pay for women, and I don't see Christians fighting for it.
Yeah.
Because that's a justice issue. Like, Why are we not on the front of the line speaking out against this and vying for the alternative, the just alternative? You know, like, it, and it's, there's similar things happening right now with race in America where it's like, these are gospel issues, like treat people like their image of God. I don't understand why Christians aren't on the front of the line talking about this. And yet we have so many disputes in-house because we think that our brothers and sisters are feminists or fundamentalists or whatever, but, you know, and so because we think on the binary. Saying,
well, yeah, what you're saying right there, Ben, and you said it before as well, I think that is the whole point that we need to come back to in this conversation is that at the moment, society dictates these conversations and says there's these camps. You can either be pro, you know, you can be a feminist or you can hate women. You can be pro-gay or you can hate gay people. So society has set up, secular society, I mean, progressive society has set up the binaries. And I think part of our responsibility as Christians, like you said, is to be on the front line. But we're on the front line because we have the gospel. And so what we're doing on the front line should be to, in a way, change the conversation and bring it back to what does Jesus say about women? How does God see women as made in his image? That to me, until we can start to do that, we'll always have the one side fighting against the other side without any sort of common ground in the middle. I just think that is the answer. And it's hard to inject the gospel into secular society in a meaningful way, but I think that's actually an opportunity we have to show people that within the gospel, within the story of God's plan for humanity, there is actually a peace and a beauty and a way of working together and loving neighbor that you don't get when you have the binaries that society is currently working to.
I think you're right, Craig, that is sort of the heart of the issue, the binary and sort of the third way or the third opposite. It's not sort of a middle of the road attempt where you get the best of both sides. It's actually a completely different alternative, like opposite of both. You can think of it like a triangle. But to me, the root is how the culture defines love. So if love is tolerance or accepting me as I am and not telling me to change, in fact, to tell me to change anything about me would be hatred. If that's how you define love, well, then you can get to a lot of places from there that are obviously contrary to the Bible. But that's not what love is, because God defines love. And so that to me is we start from the wrong starting place and we end up in all kinds of weird places. But the logic makes sense. You just started from the wrong starting place. You didn't start with God's definition of love. You made up one for yourself.
And I guess to go back to like the original article, we did kind of, I guess we didn't officially address the issue of should this be happening? What should we be doing, etc., which I think has been talked about a lot in already. We kind of get the advantage of taking this news like 2 weeks later after there's been a lot of discussion and there's been a lot of stuff that Uber has like now responded to, been like, okay, yeah, we'll look into this, that sort of thing. Obviously, we're going to take the biblical stance of women are neighbors just like men are. Like women ought to be treated with love in the biblical sense of you don't sexually harass women. Like this is obvious. The Bible would condemn the actions of the things that are happening in Uber, and you know we shouldn't be shielding the people that are good at their job just because they're good at their job because they're doing terrible things, right?
Yes. Yeah. This seems obvious. I don't think it's funny either. I think it's evil.
Yeah.
Just to call it what it is.
Right. Right. So just so that's clear, we didn't rabbit trail in order to avoid the topic. We're very clearly, like, I think the secular world and us are currently on the same page as far as that goes. Just to put the Christian worldview in there.
So something else that I guess I kind of thought of, as we were discussing, kind of as we were falling down the rabbit hole, I guess, I think that maybe one of the reasons why this is maybe shocking to people, I mean, this kind of behavior within any company should be shocking to people. It shouldn't be something that we kind of turn a blind eye to. But I think maybe that tech companies are seen as sort of the most up to speed on where society is currently at. They're seen as the innovators, the ones who are pushing boundaries, and therefore the ones who are most representative of where society is currently at and where it's trying to get to. And so I think maybe part of the reason that people are kind of so up in arms and kind of how could Uber be like this type of thing might be that they kind of have higher expectations of the tech industry for that reason, because they kind of think that it should be the most progressive of industries in a way. Mm-hmm. And maybe that, you know, there's some truth to that, I suppose, but I think at the end of the day, this just highlights the fact that no matter what industry you're in, no matter what work you're doing, and no matter what product you're trying to create, at the end of it, when you have a whole bunch of fallen people who don't have have Jesus as their center, the central point in their lives, you're going to run into issues of sin in the workplace, and it's going to be in some cases pretty major and pretty obvious, and it's not something that can just be fixed by being in a particular industry, a particular work sector that might be more sort of technologically advanced or you know, humanly advanced than another sort of part of the workforce.
I think the sad fact of the matter is today, these conversations take place online, so on Twitter and Facebook. And usually it's very heated and not productive. So by way of practical application to the conversation we've just had, I'm posting in the show notes an article I read yesterday by a friend of the show, Tim Challies, called 7 Rules for Online Engagement. And it goes back to something Derek said earlier, which is, you know, if you took the misrepresentation and the inconsistency out of the conversation, you'd probably lose all the vitriol too. And so just practically check out that article and maybe try to follow those things in your own life. And I bet you'll see your conversations with others become more profitable in terms of love and not hate. And the gospel's definition of love, not the world's. Well, if you would like to connect with us, you can do so by jumping in our Slack team. Sign up at slack.techreformation.com.
And you can visit our website at techreformation.com to search for past shows and topics. Just hit the little search box and type in something that's interesting to you. And there's a whole bunch of tags for the last 75 episodes. Hopefully there'll be something there that you like and you can share it with someone else.
And if you have not done so already, take your closest friend's phone, ask them if you can look something up on their web browser, and then download a podcast app and put us in it and put us on their home screen. Just do a hostile takeover of your friend's phone and they will love us and it will be great.
My name has been Robin and I approve this message. Well, this has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.
Did that?
I think Craig did it. It's about Australia. Which, by the way, I always spell Australia Aus Trail ia, which I always know is wrong. There's only one I in Australia.
Correct.
But it always feels like I should spell it trail.
Well, it's Australia if you want to say it as written.
Is,
but that's
is
not
that how
it,
you say it?
No. We say Australia, but it Australia. Just, if you want to pronounce it phonetically.
Australia. Say it again.
We say Australia.
Australia.
Yeah, we say Australia. No one here says Australia, but
no one says that's Australia. That's an American.
Yeah, you guys say like Aussies and stuff like that. Like you call us Aussies.
So it would be
what do you say? Assies?
Aussies.
Oh,
like Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, Aussies. Okay. Okay, sounds great.
Now you sound British.
Aussies. You know what's really funny is that Aussies. Every time I do this, whichever one I'm trying to do,
now
sounds
you sound
like
South
the opposite.
African.
I was in Great Britain the other day before we were there for a day before India. And I was trying to do a British accent and everyone kept telling me I sounded Australian.
No, you definitely sound British.
Well, that's really funny.
Probably doesn't sound like anything to either. But
yeah, that's right.
All right.